Hey everybody, welcome to another special Bacon's Friday rant. This time around, just like I had on Sunday, I've got my good buddy Corey of Corey's Corner on the phone with me today. And we're going to be discussing the December 15th Fox News Republican debate, which I just watched most of. Unfortunately, I didn't catch the live debate, and the only videos of it online were on YouTube, and the last two parts were removed for copyright infringement by Fox News. So, unfortunately, I don't know what the last 20 or 30 minutes were all about, but we'll try the best that we can. Corey, how's it going? Corey?
Oh, that means, sorry. Doing pretty good.
All right, fantastic. Thanks for wasting valuable time, schmuck. Okay, so let's start off. I asked this question the first debate, or when we talked about the last weekend's debate, and I'll ask the question again. Who do you think won this particular debate?
Well, last week I recall saying I didn't think anybody won. And my candidate, I think Mitt Romney had his worst debate last week. I think he bounced back in a big way, and I'm going to call him the winner. Because I say that strategically, more so than substantively, because that's always a subject, that's a debate within itself, who won the debate. But I think strategically, because he had a poll going into Iowa saying he led Iowa, and he came out with several major, really strong responses. He actually did pretty well on the social issues, and he actually had a very strong overall performance, and he really needed to bounce back from the last debate. And I'll give Newt Gingrich hour two a tie with Romney for the win. I think Gingrich started off extremely, extremely poor. He actually showed moments where he was flustered by Michelle Bachmann, but he came back on strong in the second hour, and really, really rebounded. And quite frankly, that's it for the winners. I think you could say Bachmann is a subsequent winner, maybe. She's a subcategory winner. I say a winner in the sense it's really not going to matter much for her, I don't think, at this point. I don't know how many votes she's going to actually gain from it, but I think if you're going to go with three winners, it has to be those three. The rest of them pretty much lost.
All right, well, I gotta say, I felt like, and I can always give this to Fox News, and I'm sure someone's gonna stumble across it and go, "Oh, of course, Fox News is a Republican source." Of course, you're gonna say, but in all honesty, I really believe Fox News does a very good job at organizing their debates and trying to make sure that people get good opportunities. And this particular debate, I felt like they did a nice job spreading around questions. I mean, there were points when certain people maybe kind of got a little bit more attention depending on what the issue was. For example, there was an exchange between Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann relating to Iran that lasted kind of a little while. But for the most part, it did seem like a pretty well spread out debate, Corey. I don't know if you felt the same way about it, but I thought that's the way it looks that way to me.
I thought they gave too much time to John Huntsman and Ron Paul. I thought there was time where I'm thinking to myself, Romney is one of the main frontrunners, and at some point, you have to just look at the fact that some people just are not registering in the polls. I don't mean one or two polls, I mean consistently throughout the polls throughout the entire process. And people like Santorum, who I like Santorum, and I don't like Huntsman, but you just kind of start to realize they're not going anywhere. It's time to really give the frontrunners most of the time, and I know some people complain about that, saying, "You need to give them all equal time." Well, they've had, 15 debates now, and they're still not registering. It's time to really focus on, like, a guy like Gingrich, and even Ron Paul, I'll even say, because he is registering pretty well in the polls, Romney. I'll even say, to some degree, a Bachmann and a Perry, and Perry mostly because he's a big name, not even because he's registering that well in the polls anymore. But somebody like Huntsman, I got an argument with a state legislator last night on Twitter. John Huntsman, Paula Dockery supports John Huntsman, and I told her, "This guy's done, and thank God." And she said, "Keep trying to convince yourself of that." And I responded, "Well, according to the polls, it's you that has to convince yourself that he's not done." I mean, it's just, I can't stand listening to him talk. I almost want to change the channel. I have an Obama effect when I listen to Huntsman talk. And I think they gave him way too much time. I guess that's my personal bias, and it probably is. I wouldn't even have cared if they... I'm not saying they had to give that time to Romney. They could have given it to Gingrich, Perry, whatever. At least Perry's funny to listen to. Huntsman's just arrogant, pompous, plastic, boring. I can't stand listening to him. It's almost like listening to Obama for me.
Well, I made the comment to you via text message as I was watching the debate that John Huntsman reminds me very much of Charlie Crist, former governor of Florida.
Oh, he's a clone of Charlie Crist.
He's overly polished. He has like these wonderful little stories that he can tell with every answer. And like, for example, there was a question they asked, which I thought was actually a really good round of questioning, which was about justices and the judicial system and the judicial branch of government. And they went around down the line and they asked, you know, who your favorite Supreme Court justices were or what have you. And, you know, first, I think Santorum took a while to answer, but he eventually did answer the question. Perry took a little bit of time, and then Romney answered quickly. Gingrich answered quickly. Paul, dumbest answer, he said they're all good and they're all bad. I'm like, great way to avoid the question and appease everybody, it seems. Bachman answered quickly. And then they get to the Huntsman, and he gives this long, antiquated, little anecdote about how, well, you know, most people don't realize this, but governors really spend a lot of time dealing with the rule of law and blah, 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 blah. And then he finally came to an answer, and I was like, kind of like, was that needed? Was that really, seriously? Was that necessary? Like, why is he trying so hard in Iowa? He is not going to, like, he's not registering in Iowa. He's banking everything on New Hampshire, which is going to fail and blow up in his face. But, you know, the whole...
He might finish fourth in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that I agree with you. I think the person... first off, I gotta say, I think it's kind of funny you got into a debate with somebody on Twitter. Like, really? But,
It wasn't just anybody. It was actually a state senator.
Yeah, well, that's even funnier. but, you know, it's
who actually ran for governor against Bill McCollum before she dropped out.
That's very humorous. But, you know, I mean, it's... The whole idea that Huntsman is somehow still considered a viable candidate to some people, that boggles the mind. Matter of fact, let me break away from this debate real quickly. You and I were talking earlier before I started watching the debate. We wanted to make some predictions of when we think people are going to start dropping out. So let's have some fun here. We'll get back to the debate in a second. Let's have some fun here. So let's make some predictions. You made a point, by the way. You said three people need to make it to Super Tuesday, which we think is a week or two after Florida's primary, which is at the end of January. And I don't have the dates in front of me, so I don't know what the date would be for Super Tuesday. I know, I'm awful. The whole point of these rants is that they're vastly, you know, unprepared. Yeah, exactly.
You mean like a
Rick Perry speech. Okay. Yeah, exactly. You know, somehow it worked for him in Texas for 10 years. So anyway, but we have, you say three candidates are making it to Super Tuesday. You call them. Three candidates. Who are they going to be?
Well, first it's going to be Ron Paul.
Okay.
There's a reason for that. I'm going to give my little analysis on each candidate.
Sure.
Ron Paul, because of the fact he's got obviously the most cult following of any candidate. And on top of that, he's actually registering in the polls to some degree. In 2008, he really didn't. But 18% in Iowa is nothing to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
If he pulls a third place, even second place finish, or even pulls off the upset in Iowa, that guy, there's no way he's not staying until Super Tuesday. There's no way. If he has a surprisingly low finish, like a fifth or sixth place for whatever reason, because that debate might do him in because he was so bad on foreign policy.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute.
Oh, yeah, I'm just giving my reasoning.
Yes.
That he might actually, you know, fall in the polls in Iowa. He's stubborn enough, and he gets enough money from his supporters, that he'll still stay till Super Tuesday. He's going to stay. He's just stubborn enough. I think Mitt Romney's an obvious one.
Right.
He'll probably finish second, or he could pull off the upset in Iowa. And he'll win New Hampshire, most likely. And now with Nikki Haley on board, he has a shot in North Carolina. And if he pulls off all three or two out of the three, Florida's looking pretty good. And all of a sudden, Romney obviously has the money. He has the stamina. He knows how to run national campaigns. So he's going to be there Super Tuesday. Newt Gingrich, I would have never thought it 6 months ago. I would have said, there's no way he's getting past Iowa. Because he was so low in the polls, it was ridiculous. Now, clearly, he has the numbers. There's a billionaire out there willing to donate, I think, $20 million to Newt Gingrich, is what I'm reading. And if he has that kind of money, and that will kind of war chest, not only are his debts paid off, but he's going to have no problem staying until Super Tuesday, no matter what he finishes. And I think he's stubborn enough, no matter what happens in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Florida, that he will stay.
All right, so those are the three heading to Super Tuesday. So that leaves, we have seven major candidates who are part of that debate who actually seem to matter. I said to you that if Rick Santorum finishes poorly in Iowa, he's done. How bad would Santorum have to finish in Iowa to be done? What's bad for Santorum in Iowa?
He's going
to
finish fifth or sixth in Iowa.
Okay.
It's just he just does not resonate with voters.
If they were pointing out during the debate that he's visited Iowa more than any other candidate.
Exactly. He's there all the time. He's banking on Iowa. He's getting nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Tim Pawlenty, after the Iowa straw poll. But he put so much into it, all his resources into it, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
And he said, all right, now time's done. Santorum is done after Iowa.
Okay.
I predict after his poor finish in Iowa, he'll realize it's just not going to happen because he's not going to even come anywhere near New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, if you get blown out in Iowa and in New Hampshire, you might as well just quit.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to have any momentum, there's not going to be any donors, there's not going to be any support. You might as well just say, okay, this is done, it's over with. But Iowa, he's going to have a surprisingly high finish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking third place or higher in Iowa for him to have any confidence going forward. Or his campaign people having any confidence going forward. So I have to believe Iowa, Rick Santorum's done.
All right, so you're calling Santorum after...
Let's add to this game, though. Who do you think they're going to endorse when they drop up?
Oh, geez. Holy crap. I could see Santorum, believe it or not, probably endorsing Romney. And I believe that because if you watch the debates, especially the recent ones, the last couple in particular, there were a lot of points. Now, I know that, and I didn't get to see it because the stupid video was taken off, but you told me about an exchange between Santorum and Romney about gay marriage licenses in Massachusetts that Romney basically ruined Santorum's credibility on, I guess. And, yeah, I didn't see the exchange, unfortunately, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Santorum come out for Romney, just mainly because there have been a lot more points that I think Santorum can see eye to eye with Romney on. He obviously doesn't, particularly, and the big one basically is foreign policy, because obviously he's not going to support Ron Paul. He may consider. There could be a possibility he'd back Gingrich, but I don't know. He's gone after Gingrich probably a lot more than he's gone after Romney. So I would.
I predict he endorses Gingrich. Gingrich was a childhood icon of Rick Santorum.
All right, that's probably a far better reason than I can come up with for the other one. All right, so let's see. We got Santorum dropping out after Iowa with a poor finish, which I believe is possibly inevitable. How about Michelle Bachmann? How far is she going?
I'm going to say South Carolina.
Okay.
I think she's going to finish fourth in Iowa.
All right.
And I think, and then I think New Hampshire's going to get blown out of the water.
Okay.
And I think she thinks highly enough of herself that once she goes to South Carolina and finishes fourth or fifth, then she's going to realize, okay, it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to take her a little bit to realize it's not happening. She's fairly new to politics overall.
Right. Well, we've been saying that.
There's a saying in football, when you're a young team and you're winning, that you're too naive to realize you're not supposed to be winning. And I think she's naive enough to believe that no matter what happened in Iowa, New Hampshire, that she still has a shot at winning. I mean, to be honest with you, the way the poll numbers are now, I think she's naive for believing she's a serious candidate now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's going to get to South Carolina, and then her campaign's going to say, listen, this is not happening.
Yeah.
And then I think she endorses Romney.
All right, I could probably agree with that. I would probably say the big defining factor for that one would be, and we saw it in this most recent debate, which was her criticism of Newt Gingrich's involvement with Fannie and Freddie. So, or Freddie Mac, I should say. Not it wasn't with earlier both of them, but still, that was kind of the big dividing line for the two of them.
Well, she just came out of an interview and called Gingrich a big government. Republican, so she said he's exactly what we don't need in Washington. I mean, you can't say that and then endorse the guy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Huntsman, that one's obvious. He's banking on New Hampshire. He's not going to make it past New Hampshire.
You're right. Once he finishes fourth or fifth in New Hampshire, he realizes, wow, my campaign went nowhere fast. I'm sorry, Daddy.
I'm going to say, I say he's not going to come out in favor of anybody, to be honest. I think he's gonna I see him probably better off laying low and then maybe not really getting involved in it at all. And then, you know, I say give him two more years and he's running for Senate somewhere.
You know what? I think you're right. I actually agree with you 100%. I think the 1% in Utah, but I think Orrin Hatch is coming up soon. Maybe I'm thinking a long year for Orrin Hatch. I might be. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. I think he's going to run for something in Utah at some point. Now, here's the thing, though. I'm going to play it and try to play the game and try to figure out if he is to endorse anybody, it'll be Romney.
Yeah.
Yes, he's been a little critical of Romney on here and there, but the only reason for that is he knows he's trying to re-eat into Romney's base.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not trying to take away the Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann, Newt Gingrich base. He can't do it. And that's why he's been fighting in New Hampshire like crazy. He's basically been living there for the past 6 months.
Yeah, matter of fact, if I may jump in real quickly, he originally became the first ever presidential candidate to have an office, his head campaign headquarters, in Orlando, Florida. And that was mainly because his wife is from Orlando, and he talks about how Florida was such an important state. And then, a few months ago, he moved his entire operation out of Orlando, and he moved to New Hampshire, to add to your point.
He wants New Hampshire in the worst way. He knows that's his best bet. Yeah, this guy considers him, because he keeps calling himself the most consistent conservative, and yet you're banking on New Hampshire.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the more moderate Republicans going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know. I just criticized Romney, right? No. Romney's going to do well in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Florida.
Yeah.
But Romney being from the Northeast, it kind of makes sense he would do well in New Hampshire.
Yep, that's...
He finished second there in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So, Huntsman has been banking on New Hampshire. He isn't even trying in Iowa. Forget it. I'm Mormon. I'm not going to win in Iowa. So, I mean, I think he gets out after New Hampshire. I think you're right. I think this is just the beginning of his political career in a sense. I think he's even governor of New Utah, but I think he has higher ambitions in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think if he's going to endorse anybody, I can see your point. I can see him not endorsing anybody. But if he's going to, I think it's Romney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll
be the endorsement of the year that means absolutely nothing. Right?
Yeah. Last one would be Rick Perry.
Oh, God.
Rick Perry, I think, will make it to Florida. I think more so because for kind of the same reason as you mentioned with with Michelle Bachmann, where he's just kind of stubborn about it. He thinks that he can probably pull out the late win and, you know, to use his horrible reference, he believes he is the Tim Tebow of the political scene right now. I know he referred more mainly to Iowa, but I think he really does believe that. So I see him making it to Florida, and then he drops out after that. And as far as an endorsement goes, I would be willing to bet he'd be more in favor of endorsing Gingrich.
Not going to be Romney.
Yeah, he's been far less critical of Newt Gingrich. Matter of fact, there was even one point where he almost kind of defended Newt Gingrich during one of the exchanges in the Iowa debate last night. So he would probably come out in support of Gingrich.
I agree. Perry's the one I consider a variable. He's kind of interesting because he's got a load of money, a ton of money. And it's really, the only problem with his campaign is him. It's not his organization. it's not the money. So, I mean, Herman Cain can communicate, but God, he had no money.
Yeah.
But Rick Perry, he shoots himself in the foot left and right all the time. And I can see him dropping out South Carolina.
Mm.
However, I'm not going to make that call. I'm going to agree with you on Florida, because I'm going to go in between. And this is what I mean. I can see him, first of all, finishing fourth or fifth in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I can see him finishing fifth or sixth in New Hampshire, maybe fourth. Then I can see him finishing third or so in South Carolina. Maybe even higher. Maybe as high as second. Second, third, maybe he could go as low as fourth, depending on how things go.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see him finishing third in South Carolina, where he's basically like Fred Thompson and not really doing anything.
Right.
I can see him drop out after that unless he sees a chance in Florida, which I don't see where, because he's not pulling well in Florida either. But, I mean, I can see him being stubborn enough to go all the way to Super Tuesday because of how much money money he has.
All right.
And the thing is, though, I don't know what will happen. He's unpredictable because he's been unpredictable this entire campaign. I really thought when he got in, he was a serious threat to Romney. I was like, oh man, this guy's gonna be a challenge. But he's his own worst enemy. I mean, last night I heard him in a debate, and I'm not trying to break off the topic we're on, but you listen to him, and he said, when he said about Obama, we'll get it on. I'm like, oh my god, you sound like a hillbilly. and then he goes, we're gonna show our big differences, which are great. And I'm like, why is this guy? Why do people find this guy impressive? I don't get it.
Oh yeah, and you're right. I mean, Perry has, I occasionally tell this story. I think I've told you about it, but I remember reading an article in National Review right around the time that Perry got into the race, right before his first national debate, and they wrote, I don't remember who wrote the article on National Review Online, but they basically called Perry the Great Debater.
And
I remember reading the article, and I thought, these are the examples you're using of him being a great debater? He basically, like, had to make his opponents in Texas look like they were incompetent. And he didn't, apparently from the quotes that they used in the article, I don't know if there's anything more substantive than what they used in the article, but it really just made him sound like he was an idiot. And he was just basically twisting stories and words in order to try to make him look more appealing. And I think that's kind of pathetic. That's not a sign of a great debater. A great debater is someone who can bring up facts and ideas that make a lot more sense than your opponent, and that's not Rick Perry.
Honestly, I think Rick Perry's best debate was his very first debate.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he actually came out, he came on the attack. He gave everybody what they wanted. They wanted to see him attack Romney, and he was the first one to really attack Romney. And he tried. Didn't really succeed, but he tried. And, really, it's just gotten worse since then. We all know about all the flubs he's made. And last night, I'm reading where people are saying, oh, it's his best debate. Oh, he looks so good. Oh, what is so impressive about a guy who has to think about every word he says? I'm saying he literally has to think about the ands and the thes and the I's. I mean, he can't even just spit out a sentence.
Yeah.
It's too difficult for him. I'm thinking, you want this to debate Obama? Who is one of the biggest BS artists of our time in politics?
Mm-hmm.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank you at all. He's not quick-witted. He's not very intelligent. I'm sure he's done some good things as governor. I mean, there's some things I agree with. At the same time, there's some things I vehemently disagree with.
Yeah.
And I love the fact in the last debate, where he went after Romney for a mandate again. And I love the fact Romney did this to him, because I'm so sick of him talking about mandates. Because there's two people on the stage who cannot quip on Romney's mandates. It's Gingrich and Perry. And Perry, and I love what Romney said back, well, didn't you mandate vaccine for 12-year-old girls? So who are you to talk about mandates?
that was a great counter-argument by Romney. Absolutely. And you know, what's funny about that, and if I may jump in on that too, I remember in a previous debate a while back, Perry said he mandated that vaccine because he wanted to err on the side of life, as in he wanted to protect the girls that were vaccinated. Well, Romney can make the exact same argument with the healthcare mandate, because he says, hey, these people are going to get healthcare, that it's going to allow them to be able to be healthier because they can go see a doctor on a regular basis, and they can get the screenings that they need to get, and they can get taken care of that they need to get. I'm doing the same thing.
Well, the thing is, I don't agree with Gingrich or Romney about mandates at all, but I agree with their argument. Because I talked about this, I was in a conservative chat room one time, and I got reamed for this. I said, you know what, I don't like the idea of mandates either, but we do have to do something about people who go to ER when they have a headache.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up costing a bunch of money, and they have to raise the prices for people who do have insurance. I mean, that's part of why there's healthcare inflation. Not the whole reason, obviously, but it's part of it. I love to say Romney and Gingrich both. Say it's a personal responsibility matter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to let you go to ER every time you're sick and raise the cost for the people who are responsible not to purchase health care insurance. No, and I agree with that principle. I don't agree with the mandate. I think there's other ways you can do it. I think we're starting to figure out those ideas as we go now, because for the longest time, Republicans didn't have a position I'm sorry, they didn't have a position on this issue. And now we're starting to feel our way through and figure out, okay, what's a free market way to do this instead of a mandate?
Mm-hmm.
So, and people like Gingrich, Pawlenty, Heritage, they praised Romney for what he did in Massachusetts at the time. And Gingrich has been one of Romney's biggest defenders on Massachusetts healthcare. And not for the mandate, but for the fact that he said, hey, he vetoed many portions of it. He did what he could to make it more free market oriented. I mean, he's dealing with the liberal legislature. But for Perry to say, I'm erring on the side of life, then you're getting into the business of government protecting you from yourself.
Right.
And that's exactly the epitome of anti-conservatism. That's exactly what we do not agree with. We agree with protecting people from other people.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't agree with people protecting people from themselves and their own choices.
Yeah.
So what Perry did was actually more egregious than what both Gingrich and Romney have both proposed.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get back on this debate, since we kind of been hitting on it here, but I want to get back to this debate a little bit more. You know, I got to say something. You know, Corey, you and I may occasionally disagree with what certain candidates say, but I think there's one thing that you and me and many of our friends all have agreed on, and that is that Ron Paul is screwy in the head. And
oh, yeah.
You have alluded to this just a little bit ago about his comments in Iowa in this debate that could hurt his Iowa numbers. And I mean, this is exchange. I hinted it as well. The exchange between Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann over the issue of Iran, where basically for the first time, now in the past when they give these questions to Ron Paul, he was always able to kind of maintain his cool a little bit. And I think that gave people the interpretation that he has his head on straight.
Yeah, did you notice that last night he did exactly what Mr. L, you, me, we've all made fun of him for. Why do we need another war?
I know. I think I started almost clapping at that because I've been waiting to hear that because I haven't heard that in years. But it wasn't even just that. He became flustered. He was almost raising his voice to Michelle Bachmann. He was saying that, like, Michelle Bachmann made a statement. She said that the IAEA, which I've read about this, so I know this is the case, the IAEA came out with a report that said that Iran is very close to getting a nuclear weapon. And Ron Paul goes off and he says, oh, no, that's not even true. That's not true at all. I was like, yes, it is. It is completely true. And I've been saying for a long time, Ron Paul distorts facts to fit his idea of how he thinks the world works. And he has been vehemently wrong on this issue constantly, but last night was the first time he actually looked crazy. Like, not just sounded crazy. I always think he always sounds crazy. People often disagree with me on that, which is amazing to me. But this is the first time he looked crazy. He was swinging his arms wildly. He was raising his voice at Michelle Bachmann. He was trying to... he was saying things as if he thought they were true. And he actually, at one point, got booed, if I recall correctly.
So did Bachmann. She got a few boo birds from the Bob Paulbot. I got to make a quick note. I got to sympathize with our good friend, David Cholesterol,
mm-hmm.
who his favorite candidate is Newt, and Michelle Bachmann. She's slamming Newt Gingrich left and right, fighting with him, but David Cholesterol also equally hates Ron Paul as much as he loves Newt Gingrich. So Michelle Bachmann, the same candidate slamming Newt Gingrich, goes and basically kicks Ron Paul in the nuts. You gotta wonder what he's thinking about Michelle Bachmann right now.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's probably never been a point where he's loved and hated somebody at the same time so much.
I thought about that last night as it was happening. I'm like, oh, DC is thinking watching this.
But yeah, let's talk a little bit about that exchange, though. I mean, first off, I think Michelle Bachmann, people forget this about Michelle Bachmann. If there's one thing that she is pretty good on, one issue, it's national security. She is on a House Intelligence Committee. She gets a lot of this classified information. She's talked about some of those things. She's hinted at them. She can't talk about things that are classified, obviously, in national debates. But she has hinted that she has seen certain evidence and certain information that leads her to the conclusions that she has. And you're gonna Ron Paul thinking he can go up against Michelle Bachmann on national security. I'm sorry, that's just funny to me.
Well, Michelle Bachmann won the exchange. She showed power. She showed calmness and a coolness and a leadership ability to take an issue that, quite frankly, is a very populist issue for Ron Paul to take. and that's pretty much the primary support. His primary support comes from is from the fact that he's so vehemently anti-America on foreign policy. I'm not even going to say anti-war anymore because we're all anti-war.
Mm-hmm.
He's anti-America on foreign policy. And quite frankly, if Dick Morris was tweeting last night, I'm sorry, I cringe every time I say that word. As he was typing on Twitter last night, that Ron Paul is just coming off as anti-America when he does this. I mean, he basically defended Iran's right to have a nuke and saying it's our fault.
Mm-hmm.
That they even want a nuke. You're right. These people who murder and destroy their own people have threatened Israel and America for years. They're getting a nuke because of the fact that they're so intimidated by us. That's what it is. They're so intimidated by American power. They feel like they need a nuke to defend themselves. You know what I think we should do? We should defend the regime in Iran as the murdering brute dictator that they are. Mm-hmm. That's what we should do. We should just let that happen. Like, they're slaughtering gays. They're stoning women to death. They're brutalizing their own people. We do nothing to help their people overturn that regime. Which would make America and the world a safer place. And I'm not suggesting nation building, but I am suggesting that maybe it is America's place in the world to say, you know what, we'll help these people. We'll help these people who want to get rid of this brute dictator, of a regime that's killing its own people. I know somebody like Ron Paul will say, well, that's up to the people to do. Well, I hate to tell you this, but sometimes the people need help, in the American Revolution when the French helped us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fact of history. If it benefits our interest, why shouldn't we get involved? I'm tired of this naive isolationist theory that if we leave them alone, they'll leave us alone. That's just not true. Because not only are they not leaving us, they're not going to leave us alone, but they're also messing with our allies.
Mm-hmm.
A very strong ally in Israel. Israel, who's getting bombed 1,400 times a day or something absurd to that effect. So, The way I look at it is, you can't talk about destroying our ally, destroying us, and expect us just to accept the fact you want a nuclear weapon. And of course, Ron Paul goes even further to say, well, it's because of us that they even hate us. What do we do? I mean, what is this? This is like group therapy for Ron Paul. I can see him as Dr. Phil sitting in the middle of the crowd. Maybe you should look at yourself and what you did to cause this.
That's a great analogy.
And I can see him sitting between America and Iran crying and whining and talking about destroying other countries, and America trying to interrupt, and Dr. Paul saying, no, America, let Iran finish.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. And I remember watching back in 2006, I remember there was a brief conflict that broke out between Lebanon and Israel. And of course, you probably know what I'm talking about. You probably remember this too. And I remember it was really interesting because Lebanon was the first to start launching missiles into Israel, which caused Israel to retaliate, but yet the entire world was slamming Israel, saying they started it. And there's a whole other war going on here outside of the militaristic war of missiles and bombs that's going on, and that's a media war. And so many of the Middle Eastern countries have been able to find a way to convincingly play victim in all this. And that, I think, has helped grow the anti-Israeli sentiments, the anti-American sentiments. And Ron Paul, he's buying into it. You know, he claimed last night during the debate, he goes, oh, well, how many different people do the CIA capture and interview, and then they tell him the reason why the terrorists come here to hurt us is because we're over there bombing them. And it's like, you're going to buy into that? Are you
kidding? I'm not even sure if he's telling the truth, because I'm not seeing these big crowds of people telling us that.
Yeah, you know, and that's the big thing, too.
If he's willing to lie about the IEAU report, if he's willing to, did I get the acronym correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay, if he's willing to lie about that report, and the CIA report, then why are they not willing to, why would I believe he's not willing to lie about the piece? Well, just massive amounts of people who say it's our fault.
Yeah, and that's, but the whole idea there, though, is that let's say he really is finding interviews with terrorists who say, we're attacking you because you attack us. He's buying into the propaganda that has been put forth by Middle Eastern countries for I mean, obviously I haven't been following this as closely because I'm just getting into politics these last several years, but for at least 5 years, they've been pushing this narrative that they're being picked on by the big evil America and the big pushy Jews in Israel, and they whine about it, and it works! It works every single time, and it blows my mind. How is it that Lebanon could be the first to go launching missiles into Israel and then claim it was Israel's fault? That is amazing to me.
Well, and yet this is what Ron Paul ignores about history. This is something that goes back 1,000 years between the Israelites and the Arabs. I mean, this is just typical history lesson for Ron Paul. This isn't something new that started because of America. They've been pirating. I mean, since the founding, these people have been pirates.
Mm-hmm.
They've been pirating merchants and ships. They've been a cause for disruption in the world. Although, when I'm not saying all Muslims are disruptors, no, that's not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that part of the world has been a hornet's nest for God knows how long. This isn't simply an America problem. This is a world problem. These people don't know how to live. They don't know how to live. I mean, they don't know how to live in peace. That's what drives me nuts. It's the people of that region. So, for him to ignore this and to say it's America's fault, like this just happened in the last 100 years, is just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I think he's against the fact that the League of Nations or the United Nations are. I'm sorry, I'm blanking here, but the United Nations actually, the world created a place for Israel to have a country.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically against that theory. We shouldn't have done that. And I think to myself, why? They have what? A country the size of New Jersey? In the Middle East, surrounded by 57 enemies. So the way we did it, for them to even try when they have to have Israel land, is pathetically stupid and ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Ron Paul. Frankly, he's just getting me ticked off enough to where I'm exhausted by the subject now.
Yeah, well, we'll close out that subject at least with this question. How bad do you think this might hurt him in Iowa?
I think it's going to hurt them a lot. I think Iowans care a lot about social issues, and Ron Paul, to them, first of all, he's not that great on the social issues, because he's good on abortion, but he's bad on gay marriage. But also, I think it's going to hurt him a lot, because like you said, he actually for once kind of looked crazy along with sounding crazy.
Yeah, and I, and the fact that, and it's going to hurt him really bad as well when you consider his place in the polls in Iowa. Like you said early on, he's the latest poll out of Iowa had him at 18%, behind Gingrich and Romney, and behind the two of them by a very small margin, mind you. So, excuse me, you have if this hurts him bad enough. You know, I think that, and here's another thing too, is I think that a lot of social conservatives, particularly social conservatives, who believe in the Judeo-Christian values that helped found this country, would also, I would assume, probably be allies of Israel and want to support Israel. So when you've got Ron Paul being so vehemently crazy about not wanting to deal with Iran, and in a reasonable way, and kind of stabbing Israel in the back. I mean, I agree with Michelle Bachmann full-heartedly. She said that Ron Paul's comments were some of the most dangerous things she's ever heard somebody say about the issue.
He's Neville Chamberlain, Ron Paul. That is the modern-day Neville Chamberlain.
Yeah, exactly. He's the type who would be willing to appease anyone. And I got to, you know, there was a great, they actually have a quote that before they asked Governor Romney about foreign policy. But Romney has a quote in his book, No Apology, where he says something along, I don't remember it completely, but he says something along the lines of, timidness brings about acts of aggression, what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? He is absolutely right. And we saw this, and they used as an example the issue of Iran with the drone that got lost in there. We believe Iran, they're extracting information from it, they're learning about the drone because it's still in one piece, and I've been hearing that apparently these drones have mechanisms in them that allow them to self-destruct at the controller's discretion, so that way it keeps that information from getting into the wrong hands. How is it this thing's not destroyed? Like, if somebody wants to make an argument for not going in to get it, you know, I can kind of understand that. But then at least do something about it. And Romney...
should have been destroyed.
Absolutely. That thing should have never touched down. Should have never landed in Iran. It should have been... it should have blown up. It should have been falling to pieces in the deserts of Iran and never been recovered in one piece in as good a condition as it is. So... and this is... and quite frankly, Ron Paul... I believe a President Ron Paul would be just as dangerous, and he would make just as many stupid decisions like this. And, you know, Obama's decisions could lead to something really bad, and Ron Paul is not... as a matter of fact, I want to point this one out real fast. Bret Baier gave Ron Paul 3 opportunities to answer a question. If I recall correctly, the question, and I'm going to paraphrase here, was... first, it was a hypothetical that... if he was given substantial intelligence that Iran did have a nuclear weapon, would he intervene in some way, whether it be through sanctions or diplomatic or whatever, you know, barring military operation? And he also said, are you, as candidate Paul, putting yourself to the left of Barack Obama on this issue? Paul did not answer the first question. At all. He continued to push the idea that there is no substantial evidence, which, as we've already pointed out, is not true. And then Bret Baier repeated, no, I'm giving you a hypothetical. You do have substantial information. Do you act on it? He again floundered. He avoided it. And quite frankly, and then he gave him a third time. Still, he didn't answer it. That tells you everything you need to know about Ron Paul. This is something he wants to avoid like the frickin' plague. And, I'll even say a minute, if take 1 second here to kind of my favorite rebuttal against Ron Paul was Newt Gingrich in the last debate, I believe, when Ron Paul suggested terrorism was a criminal act and not an act of war. And he used the example of Timothy McVeigh and how the criminal justice system worked well for him. And then they go to Newt Gingrich and Newt Gingrich says, well, Timothy McVeigh succeeded.
Exactly.
It's like, we're trying to keep that from happening. We do not need another 9/11 when 3,000 innocent lives are killed in order to start prosecuting terrorists. We need to stop them before they can pull it off. So, anyway, I got to agree with you. We need to put
I'm listening to you, and I agree with you. I'm just so sick of the topic of Ron Paul that I
know. Yeah, well, let's put it to bed. We're running over 40 minutes on this little rant here, so how about this? Well, let's close it out with some final thoughts on the debate. You already started off with the kind of the winners and losers type thing, but final thoughts of the debate and maybe some predictions that you see happening in Iowa.
My final thoughts on the debate are, I think, I was very proud of my candidate, Romney, who I thought was clear. He was calm, collected. He showed leadership, and he showed, let's just say, a creative way of disregarding the things that Newt Gingrich had said about him over the past week. And he did it in a polite way, and he did it in a way that wasn't going to offend Newt Gingrich or his supporters. I think that was very good. I think Newt Gingrich rebounded in the second hour. So I think it's going to come down to that. I think the third guy who's in the Iowa race is going to drop a little bit. So I think it's going to come down to a two-man head between Romney and Gingrich, and I guess we'll see what happens, because Romney, turns out, he's the second choice of a lot of Iowans, according to polls.
Mm-hmm.
So if some of these candidates start dropping off and more people believe that the Santorums, the Bachmans, the Ron Pauls are not right for Iowa, I think a lot of those votes are going to go to Romney. And I think it's very plausible that, depending on the next couple weeks of campaigning, which I know all have an aggressive Iowa schedule, I think Romney has a good chance to pull off an upset there. Although I predict Gingrich will be 1 and Romney will be 2.
All right, and I'm going to agree with that sentiment completely. I actually had said a while ago that I believe, there's a key factor in here that I'm unsure about, and that's the issue of this December 27th debate that was supposed to be moderated by Donald Trump, but Trump has since dropped out of the moderating position, and I don't know if they are going to continue the debate. It probably wasn't going to happen because out of the 7 remaining candidates, only 2 had accepted the invitation. I think that the debate may not happen. And I had said, depending on how that debate went, that would probably shape a lot of results in Iowa. But I'm going to agree with you. I do think that I think Gingrich is going to have a bit of an uphill battle because of the poor performance of the first half of that debate. And I think that he still has enough momentum to probably carry him through Iowa, but I think anything beyond that is going to be very difficult. Unless he's... basically, I had said earlier this week in a note on Facebook, I said, if Gingrich isn't careful, he could self-destruct, like many of the other frontrunners who were ahead of Romney have in the past. I agree with your prediction. I would not be surprised to see Gingrich winning Iowa. I think if he does win Iowa, it will be by a pretty small margin. But I think, too, if there is a plausibility of Romney pulling the upset, and if he does, but I also will say if he does, I think it would also be by a small margin. I don't see anyone walking away with Iowa with some sort of, like, bludgeoning landslide victory at all.
I agree with that. It's going to be a small margin no matter who wins.
Yeah. And then we'll kind of see how things go from there. All right. Well, Corey, I got to thank you once again for taking time out of your life to come on my rants and talk about this debate. And I'm wondering if people are listening to these, if they're kind of wondering about the happy hour that we used to do through Blog Talk Radio. That I think you and I both expressed an interest in wanting to bring that back. I don't want to speak for you here, but I know I've expressed an interest in bringing it back.
Yeah, I'll bring it back. Yeah.
Short and sweet and to the point. Gotta love that. So, I guess we can...
Unlike husband, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess we could... I don't want to set a... Let's not set a date here. But I'm pretty confident that I think maybe by January, I bet we could probably start bringing back the happy hour. And I think that I hopefully people would enjoy that. We always had a lot of fun doing it before, and I'd be perfectly all right with doing it again.
I don't know, man. I don't think people want to listen to a couple of rhinos like ourselves.
Yeah, I know, right? Just these, you know, us two horrible, horrible, evil rhinos who know nothing about anything that anyone ever says about anything. So, I don't know what that means. All right. Corey, once again, thank you so much. Everybody out there, thank you for listening. Common Sense with Bacon.Podomatic.com. I am shutting up now.
Thank God.
Shut up.